We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
How about I go ahead and address the larger than average elephant in the room?
No, I have never coached the sport that you folks call football. And heck, you could fill two internets with what I don't know about football.
Hold on, man. If I were to get fired from a job where I'm putting cleats in the trunk of my car.
You got the boot for putting boots in the boot.
I love that. You know what the happiest animal on earth is? It's a goldfish. You know why?
No.
Got a 10-second memory. Be a goldfish, Sam.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the podcast where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo, and we are back with another Ted Lasso episode recap, Season 3, Episode 8. This one just gave me a lot of anxiety. We're going to dive into it. It's me, Caroline, and Alex. But first, let's shout out our Big Chill producer-level patrons. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Dries, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zachary, Jason Alba, Stephen DeBow, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mac Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Jim Scroggs, Andrew Teagle, and of course, Classic Stadium Fire. Big thanks to them and all of our patrons for supporting this show. We are going to have a new poll up for a movie to be covered. Whenever Ted Lasso is done, we've got a nice backlog of patron-selected, really great movies. They've been crushing it lately, so I'm excited to get to those. But I am very happy that it is Ted Lasso season. We're down the home stretch. Four more left after this. Let's dive right into this one. Me, Alex, Caroline, breaking down Ted Lasso Season 3, Episode 8. All right, returning to Big Screen Sports to break down the latest episode of Ted Lasso. It is my co-host for the win and Bet for the Win, Caroline Darney and Alex McDaniel. Y'all, which one of us would make the best private investigator?
Alex. Hands down.
Definitely Alex.
I was trying to
without a doubt. Yeah, no, that's not even... No, absolutely. I'll tell you later. I told Alex already about some Keith Morrison action I pulled off this week, but that's a story for another time. No murders were solved, guys. Sorry. Just some, I used Google image search and I felt very smart. So see, it's not me because I just for the first time used Google image search. So yeah, it's Alex.
I would be horrendous. I am very unobservant. I am very clumsy. There is that, I think it's a DirecTV commercial or something, or maybe it's Geico, where it's the guy who's like, if you're a private investigator, you're supposed to be quiet. And it's the guy being
the guys in the trash
guys
can.
In the trash can. That's the one ad on TV right now I watch every time it's on. I laugh every time it's on because I'm like, that's me. That's me following around Michelle and Dr. Jacob just in a trash can falling over.
Look, I don't love to subscribe to gender stereotypes, but I do think that I'll shout out the ladies. I think we've got an innate skill to track down information about, we're good at it.
give
Alex like a name, like a first name and like one fun fact about someone. And I bet you could find someone.
So here's two quick stories before we get into the point of the podcast. The woman that my sister has been dating for going on 2 years. Okay. So I guess it'd be about like 2 years and 3 months ago, my sister texted me late one night and was like, I matched this girl on Tinder or whatever. It wasn't Tinder. She will get so mad at me for saying that. Whatever y'all use for your apps, probably Bumble or something. It's like I matched with her and like, we're really vibing. And my sister had gotten out of some like rough relationships. And so as the big sister, my first concern was like, oh man, please don't let this girl suck. And and I'm like, what's her name? And Mary was like, I'm not telling you. I'm like, come on. And she's like, no, yeah, because every time I give you a name, you give me a bunch of facts I didn't ask about them. I was like, Mary, just give me a name. So I'll give you a first name. Well, she gave me a first name and mentioned that she worked in pharmacy in Memphis.
How long did it take?
Not only did I have her totally identified and tracked down within 20 minutes, my sister's favorite band is Fall Out Boy. I sent Mary, I didn't say a word. I sent Mary a photo of this girl when she was like 16 at a Fall Out Boy concert that she on her Facebook profile. And I was like, I think you're soulmates. And so they're very happy. So, I mean, maybe I helped. That's all.
Well,
I was going to tell the second story, but we're wasting time. But that's the only one you need to know.
When we need a PI for the pod, we're going to Alex. Everyone, okay, go to For the Win to check out the content. Sure, there's lots of it.
So Met much gala content right now. It's going to be a very classy week over at For the Win. We've got coronation. It's always classy over there, but you know, coronation. We got Derby, Guardians of the Galaxy, arguably the classiest of the Avengers, classiest. Perhaps.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not sure anyone's ever said that about Rocket, but
lots of class.
Yeah. No, but we had an emotional banger this week on Ted Lasso.
Mm-hmm.
After, I would say last week's episode was just all vibes, like just we're good, we're happy, things are, we got momentum. This one brought some stressors. We are talking about season 3, episode 8, We'll Never Have Paris. I was hoping for more like Casablanca references in this, but I'll get over it. while watching Henry, Ted fights the urge to spiral when Michelle and Dr. Jacob go on a romantic trip. An online leak has massive implications for Keeley. Alex, what is our opening question? What is our big takeaway from this episode?
That's why, first of all, I don't even think that's a fair question. And why would you start with me?
Because this is how it's been working. You will say one, and then Caroline will say something. No, and if Nicole or Michael here, they'll say something. And then I have a list of the next five. So we're going to talk about it all.
So I want to know how Paris in general is going to come back up in this series before it ends, because I think we have a lot of different, I don't mean like a theory kind of way. I'm not about to point out every time someone referenced Paris or France on the show, but like, there's so much to it, and it's more than the Casablanca quote. I think like we'll get into Keeley in a bit, but the specific episode of Sex and the City that she was watching, the fact that Ted references that his wife loved the hotel in the finale of, like, in the Parisian finale of Sex and the City. It wasn't the Parisian finale. It was the finale that had Paris in it. That's different. Anyway, so we've talked about this before, when they, air quotes, accidentally released like a big playlist of Ted Lasso stuff at the beginning of the season, then they changed the list. The original playlist, like the last three songs, were all French songs. And people have wondered, like, how does that play into it? And so that's, I think that's my thing. And just disclaimer, I'm not as prepared as I would like to be tonight, because it's been another Tuesday. So I'm sure a lot of you have like taken copious notes and you're ready to tell me exactly how this is going to happen. But that's my question.
I think my big takeaway is May with the nothing's impossible, Ted. Because the Ted Michelle vibes were vibing.
They were vibing.
They were vibing hard at the bar.
Yeah. And it was a mix of like, you saw, because we've previously had good interactions with Ted and Michelle, not necessarily ones that illuminated what made their relationship great before they grew apart. And so I think we started to see more of that, because we met them and they were on the rocks. Like, when she came to visit, it was tense. They already had the code words, and she was crying when she was there, and they broke up like the first time that we meet her on screen. There is like, we're getting divorced. And then we see a little bit of not really villainous stuff from her, but the texting his head on the road to get the divorce paper signed, and then the starting to date Dr. Jacob and whatever else. So this was kind of the first, there's obviously still a lot of other things going on, seeing as she was there with Dr. Jacob. But it was nice to see them, even though Ted was clearly bummed out at some of it, all of it, some of it, that they like what they got along talking about. Like they, they said similar, you know, she responded really well to his jokes about like, you know, it still feels weird. And then even at the end, when she says the exact same thing about Dave Grohl learning to drum on the pillows, like it's just so shows like how in tune they can be and have been. And so I think when you say my full lean into it is I think Ted takes her on that, the not necessarily to propose, I'm not going to jump that far ahead or whatever else, but I think he takes her on that Parisian trip that she wants to go on, and that's going to be like the last episode. Like
I think what we got to is that with Dr. Jacob, it's not going bad by any sense, but they might not be clicking like you needed to click with someone if you're going to spend the rest of your life with them. Dr. Jacob is he's a cheese dick. Like he's a corny ass dude. He is Mr. C from Abbott Elementary, but not nearly as endearing.
Charming.
Because there's that. I mean, he is not vibing with Henry, and that is important. That is extremely important if you are a single parent. And so that's clearly not there. Henry big leagues the shit out of him at the end of the episode, which rules. And then the obvious of like we've talked about this to quite a bit, but just the lack of morality in starting to see your former patient. And Ted says something in this episode, the response to Higgins, like, well, I'm not her father, you know, she doesn't need to ask me, or he doesn't need to ask. Well, if you're going to
be the nude father,
role in your son's life, you absolutely need to have that conversation. He has not, that's the thing with Dr. Jacob. He has not stepped up to one acknowledge to Ted. He hasn't put out an olive branch of like, hey man, I want to talk to you. I understand how this looks. I also understand Henry's really important to you. And he has backed out. Like that is the reddest of red flags. That is a fucking red tower.
Look, this is going to sound very pinky up monocle on, but if you come back from Paris, weekend in Paris, and you say it was all right, you had the worst trip possible. Like
the worst.
Paris is awesome. Like, and if you don't leave just wanting to, even if she doesn't want to tell him all the details because it was like a romantic weekend, and you're trying to be like cordial and polite with your ex-husband, you can do better than all right. Like that was very telling. I think that was an interesting, you know, that's what they call it, the city of all right. Was just, yeah, I could not have picked out anything that happened in this episode. Like if you're like, what do you think's gonna happen in the next episode? I wouldn't have picked any of this. Loved it. I thought it was great. I thought this episode was, there were probably a few things where like there were times where it got a little after school, especially in the locker room. But I think it was fine because I think it's something that probably needs to be heard by a lot of people. I was like, okay with Danny being the one that's like, even if it's like this, you know, like, so, but
yeah. There's a couple other, you know, I think big takeaways. One is that total football works. The club is rolling. Ted is mentally elsewhere. We are again getting to that stage where it is pretty apparent that he has a higher priority, and we see that in a big way. But it's great to see that total football is working. That is kind of moving us towards whatever on the pitch end we're gonna get in the show. This I gotta admit, guys, this one gave me I my mind did something bad here. When the camera cut to Nate and Jade in bed, my head said, oh, our precious Nate. I've been worked.
I
literally
too.
What's supposed to happen. That's like what they wanted to happen.
I've been worked.
The scene in the end where she calls him her boyfriend, I'm sorry, that was cute as shit.
Oh yeah.
It's all cute as shit.
And I we know.
Like everyone, I think ourselves included, the question we had at the beginning of the season was, how is he going to redeem himself with Ted? He had to redeem himself to himself. Like he had to go figure his shit out.
Yeah.
Before anything else.
And I don't want people to just like distill this to, oh, he redeemed himself and figured himself out because he got a girlfriend. Like there's so many more pieces to all of this. Like
he's learning how to communicate. Like that's the whole thing. Like he couldn't communicate with Ted, which is why he blew up at the end of last season.
Yeah.
And like he has, if he wants to work with Jade, he has to communicate with her. There's no working around it.
And I was so proud of him for doing that this episode. And like, sure, he did some of the dorky, like, you know.
Oh, no one cares about that.
Are you getting, do you have any plans to have any meals with anyone else in the near future, in the immediate future? I thought it was such a cute way of, like, are we exclusiving?
Listen, I mean, I empathize with that immensely. I was like, oh, that's super relatable. But Nate is the thing that he has needed since we've met him is the confidence in his own skin and the confidence to be himself. And there is still fighting that urge of having to put on a persona. We see it when he deletes his text back to Rupert after Rupert says, sorry about Ted, but he is really coming to in his own as a person and standing alone as a person. And not because I think the Nate we saw in Richmond is also deeply, you know, needing Ted's approval. And when that, yeah, attention kind of went away, that's what drove him over the edge. And Nate is learning to stand on his own. I think that's important. And eventually that will lead to an apology to Ted, but also kind of an acknowledgement, like a meeting of the minds of an acknowledgement between both of them that this is something that we can move on from. Like, of course they've got us to this point where I'm watching Nate and I'm just so happy for him. Trying to get the Love Hounds together is tough. That's a tough look for my guy.
He tried. I don't want to ignore either the you never ever see a man do this, but the very familiar thing that I think a lot of women could recognize, not to generalize, I just think we probably do it more than men. Did you brush your teeth before you got in bed? And did you shave? Oh my God, my 20s. Like, I would not do that anymore. But not that I don't care enough, but because, like, in your 20s, for some reason, you just have this mentality of, like, I need to look this way all the time. Like, I can't let my guard down. I've got to always fix up and look nice. And if any of you have watched Maisel, you know, there's, like, a whole running bit since the beginning of her, like, while she was married, she would take her makeup off after he fell asleep and put it back on before he woke up. So he never saw her without makeup. Like, that cracked me up. Because I've never known a man to do that.
I think of Kristen Wiig in Bridesmaids and she's with John Hamm. And she does the, like, where she, like, puts her hand lightly to her forehead and is like, oh, I just woke up. And she's been, like, putting on makeup and, like, woke him up on purpose. I'm just saying, I cannot wait. We have 4 episodes left. There's going to be a scene in which Nate gets to tell Ted about Jade, and I am so excited because it's going to be fantastic. Like, and I cannot wait. If it comes with, like, in my mind, I'm like, just quit, go back to Richmond, like, rejoin the Diamond Dogs and tell them about your sweet girlfriend. I just am like, oh, it's gonna be so precious, and I cannot wait.
Cannot wait. And we're closing in. We're closing in on that because we've got, yeah, what, 4 episodes left.
It's wild.
But really, with the length of these, we have 2 movies left. So that's true. the last kind of big thing is the Keeley, Jack, Jamie, Roy. This is where this was the anxiety bowl of this game. This was this was 2, 4, and 5 coaches trying to not get fired. playing the rivalry game at the end. A lot. Here's my question. Is Jack a villain? Does Jack end this a villain? Because this whole episode is a tough, not just like it, the love bombing is one thing, but a lot of what she says to Keeley and tries to do to Keeley is fairly toxic.
So I think, like, not just jump in here, but okay. The love bombing, you know, because we all had the chance to isolate it as this one thing that happened. It was like, okay, well, everybody slips up. Everybody has bad moments, bad habits even. You can be a mostly healthy, not toxic partner and have, like, a toxic trait like that, right? That you need to be aware of and fix. But what was revealed this week was that not only is Jack extremely controlling for a lot of different reasons, it's not just because she's Keeley's boss, but again, this is a problem when you get involved with your superiors. We see that she's insanely jealous because, and I think there's a line in here that's really important that kind of brings that home. And it's when Keeley says to Rebecca, "I'm not an idiot. There are photos of me topless all over the internet, but that was my choice. But from Jack's perspective, when she brought up the whole thing about it's not a good look for you to be doing that. Okay, your girlfriend is naked all over the internet by her choice. What you don't like is that was for somebody else who wasn't you. And you know who else is guilty of that? Roy. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I don't think it's a condition with Roy. I think it's a symptom, right? He had a weak moment and his head was scrambled, but he knew immediately that he messed up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't think Jack's a villain necessarily. I think Jack's a really shitty partner. And Keely's, like, resolve in that scene where she leaves, as opposed to just kind of freaking out and being like, oh no, what's going to happen? Where are you going? You know, she did ask. She's like, are you coming back? But you can tell Keely's much more secure with herself because, you know, what she went through was this whole thing about, am I supposed to be ashamed of myself?
Yeah.
And the person in her life who's supposed to be supportive is saying, yeah, you should, and you should apologize for it.
Mm-hmm. And look at the difference between, because we've seen that exact scene, different topic, but that exact scene, we've seen Roy leave. Remember when she's watching Sex in the City, freaks out, tells Roy that she needs her space. And that's when Roy says, like, I've been clinging to you like a fucking fridge magnet. And he leaves and she's upset. But there's an acknowledgement on Roy's part. You know, he learns that she needs space. And there's nothing. I don't see Jack coming to that. Jack is being incredibly aggressive or passive aggressive towards Keely. The statement that she gave her through Barbara,
calling her friend, yes, on the golf course.
Yes, mm-hmm. Tough. The Roy thing is, like you said, right away he knew, and I kind of, on first watch and rewatch, I was kind of like putting myself in his shoes and going through his head. And I, with Roy too, I think the worry is, was that post me? Cause I didn't realize until I rewatched it that she says you're up in Newcastle. So it's obvious that this went to a football player. Yeah. And I think with Roy, cause he definitely still holds out hope. He still cares for Keely. He wanted nothing more in that moment than to comfort her. And it was like, it was, again, it was a moment of weakness of like, hey, I just need to know. I need to know if it's, you know, if I need to move on or something like that. And that was,
it
that
felt
was
a little, it felt torn between old Roy jealousy with Jamie / what you're saying. Like, was this someone that's, I was like in between the two. I was like, is this still, cause part of me is like the jealousy part with Jamie doesn't make a ton of sense right now, unless this was something that they discussed and she wouldn't do for him, which would be just a ridiculous storyline, I think. But yeah, it was, I think it did show the differences. I think Jack's out. I think she's gone, which is great. Which is, open this door.
But what does that mean for KJPR?
Exactly. Like, I don't think she's gone. I think she's going to, like, again, try to love bomb her and be like, oh, I was so stupid, but not specifically address the issue. And just try to, like, confuse her to forget about it. But,
well, throughout the episode, it was a roller coaster of what I thought were either anywhere from right response to villainous responses, where every time that Keely kind of was like, wait, what is she? And then she would say, like, it'll be okay. Like, this isn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, she'd get the statement. And then when she talked to her about it, she was like, oh, it was so bad. Like, it was so much. Like, the lawyers wrote that, and so you're like, oh, okay, she doesn't really think that that's the thing. And then it would be like the next time she's like, oh, okay. So it kind of, like, you know, when she canceled the polo thing, you're like, oh, it's because she's embarrassed to be around mm-hmm. Keely. And she was like, I just didn't think that you'd want to be around the cameras. And you're like, oh, I guess I could see that.
I think it was embarrassment.
100%.
That's all it was. Yeah.
Especially after the golf scene. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because at no point does she say, like, when they finally talk about it, she doesn't say, this would be the best thing for your career because blah, blah, blah. Like, if you want to get to this next step, she says, if you're going to be seen with me, you know, and I'm funding your company, this is what you're going to have to do. And I think that's when it becomes really clear for Keely, like, what is going to be required of her to give up just to be in that relationship.
Yeah. Let's go into best scene. As always, we will talk about a lot of these scenes, but I think this had a clear, obvious best scene. Like, stands head and shoulders above everything else. And that is...
Man, I'm going to feel bad if I say one that's not.
Oh, is it? I feel like it's Beard.
Hey Jude.
Yeah, I feel like it's Beard talking Henry through Hey Jude.
Oh God,
that's one of them. I think that's one of them.
So let's talk about that scene. Though. That scene is beautiful, and in this scenario, so that makes Ted John Lennon, Beard is McCartney. If Ted starts dating anyone else, they're Yoko Ono. Who is George and Ringo in this situation? Higgins is maybe Ringo, and Roy is George.
Roy's George. 100%. I was just going to say George Harrison's my favorite Beatle because he was my dad's favorite Beatle, and I grew. See that scene, like could not resonate on some levels, like per the conversation. But the like, hey, why do you like the Beatles? Like I remember vividly listening to the Beatles and the Traveling Wilburys and like. You know, Steely Dan, like in the car with my dad when he'd drive me to lacrosse practice or soccer practice or take me to, this is going to sound really bad. He abandoned me in the forest once in Metz, France, while we were battlefielding together. He didn't really, he just got, he got a little bit out further ahead of me and I was like, I don't know where he went. And so I got a little concerned. He was not far. But then a bat flew at my head later in a fort. But, yeah, that sentence resonated with me. And it's not like, you know, you can still like listen to stuff that your parent, you know, you have to like everything your parents like, but it just, that one I felt in my soul.
Alex, when Beard says that Henry, you have a great mom and dad and they love you very much.
Man, you just go for the jugular, don't you?
I mean, not to pull back the curtain here, but Alex and I have both at been single parents and you know have been in the same position that Ted is in.
Yes. Where, you know, you have to figure out there's the parenting and there's the co-parenting and there are two different things. And then there's the relationship you have with your ex, which is another different thing. So you have like three different relationships going on. And so, you know, it can be really, no matter what situation you're in, you can be in a really healthy, I don't want to at all suggest that it has to be angry and brutal and fighting all the time. I just think we have to acknowledge that it can be, but even in like the healthiest of situations, it's hard. And especially like, you know, Kyle, I know with you and I, like we were single parents early on, you know, so there wasn't like the same situation of our kid almost being, or our kids, you know, our kids, we'll bring that up later. No one will understand that reference. When we say our kids, we don't mean we're together. We just, anyway, that's a Twitter joke if you don't get it. So like I think it is very different. Number one, when the kid has seen their parents together in a relationship, when there's been a lot of time that's passed, but like no situation is going to be easy. And I think like, you know, the biggest fear that any parent has when you decide to separate or divorce or live separately in any capacity is like, have I messed up my kid? Did I do the right thing? Should I have stayed? Should they have stayed? Should we just tough it out for 18 years and then move on with their lives? And I just thought that was really beautiful because regardless of what was literally going on in the background with Ted, like eagerly trying to find out, is she getting engaged? Beard made it so clear in terms of like from Henry's perspective, he has two wonderful parents, regardless of who is or isn't getting engaged, regardless of, you know, the divorce and everything else. And there's like assuring him, like, I know maybe this isn't the ideal situation, but you are loved and you're cared for. And I think that's all parents want for their kids, regardless of what situation they're in. Mm-hmm.
And I think that was stressing the importance of what Rebecca told on the phone. Like, you need to make the best of this time with your son, like pointing Ted in the giving him the right priority and the right mindset of like, man, you cannot worry about what's going on with things you can't control, but you can control. And I think that's something that parents in general, that sometimes you get so caught up in other shit and you forget just like you have a, even if you are in, like now I am in a two parent household with my son, and I get so caught up in other stuff. Like, hey, sometimes I forget, like in 9 years, that kid's out of here. So need to focus on and enjoy and like, you know, sing Hey Jude. Or for me, that's like watch the twins and yell at the TV with him, like stuff like that.
same.
Of course.
And just like yell at them and discipline them and be like, I've got to be mean parent today. Like even that is really meaningful stuff. I have a dear friend of mine who doesn't have kids. And believe me, I'm not one of those people who's like, if you're childless, you don't get love. Like, I think if you've been around children in any capacity, you understand that. And, you know, what they say, and they mean it from the best place because they absolutely adore Jack. They know him and it's very sweet. But he'll be like, you know, oh, you know, you're going to be, he's going to be in college when you're in your early 40s. You're going to be free and you can do what you want. I'm not to say I've never thought of this. I don't want to say that. But to me, it's like the opposite feeling in my head of like, you've only got this much time left. Mm-hmm. And if you screw this up, you know, and so I think like, I don't know, from a co-parenting perspective or just you're away from your kid or you share your kid in terms of time and space with another person, like those feelings aren't easy and they're nuanced and they're confusing and you can feel a million things at once. And so, yeah, I thought that was such a beautiful thing. And I used to sing that song to Jack when he was a baby and he knows it very well. So,
well, I was going to say too, like, first shout out to Beard, mm-hmm. like just the relationship, even if he suggests not kid appropriate activities around London, although the Jack the Ripper 6-hour walking tour that's immersive and you get chased at some point. Sounds like a real gas.
Everyone has that friend who it's like, hey, I've got, you know, it's me and my kid today, but yeah, we'll meet up and do something with you, and they just have no idea what like a 9-year-old can do.
I picked the knives factory, is that what you guys want to do? Like, just no idea. But I mean, he just read the moment so well. And especially for someone like you see a lot of his relationship with Jane that's like completely ridiculous and wild. But to see this side of Beard where like he created a memory and a moment for Jack there that is going to benefit him.
For Henry.
Who?
Jack, jeez. Grayson, and Henry are all the same person.
All the same. I mean,
love them,
I think,
dearly,
the same age. I mean, this season has put the first season was about the relationship, was about Ted and Michelle. Yeah. The second season was kind of a little bit of both. Ted kind of learning to be single and learning to kind of grow apart. And this has put the relationship with Henry on the forefront. And yeah. I think, again, Rebecca pointing him in that direction of this is your priority. And Beard, the same thing. Your parents love you. And I mean, I think all roads lead back to Kansas. There's no way that Ted is leaving the season without Henry. And that scene is beautiful.
I could be convinced now that maybe the roads don't all lead to Kansas.
See what I'm saying?
Roads could lead to Richmond
as a unit, as a family.
As a unit.
I mean, if you're Michelle and you see that quaint little town, and then you, no offense to Kansas, and you go back to Kansas,
you are great.
Yeah. I mean, most 90% of this country, if you come back to 90% of this country and then you compare that little town that is Richmond, you're just like, oh, seems kind of nice over there. Seems like they got a nice leisurely way of life.
Henry with the team, mm-hmm. like I'm so sweet. They were so sweet. And I will say, Henry, now I love that for him that he has that song, because mm-hmm. he liked the song before, but now that is a, what do they call it? What is the thing where it's like core memory, mm-hmm. whatever. Yeah. He formed a core memory outside of that. And first of all, we haven't even talked about May being an absolute goddess yet again, where she comes over with the drinks. He's like, what did you do today? You know, Prince Henry, like whatever. And he's like, we went to a West Ham game. She refused that she was going to not serve the child. And Beard being like, did you think I wanted to fucking be there? You two are on probation.
I think part of it too, and I think, mind you, I think if like, Jason and Brendan weren't friends at all, that scene would have been just as impactful. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm the last person to make a parallel, you know, here to Jason's personal life. But I think what hit harder for me there was Jason and Brendan are best friends. We know that Jason Sudeikis and Olivia Wilde have gone through a very public split and custody suit. It's no one's business. I'm not here to gossip about that. But I think watching him say what he said, it just made me feel like he might have had that conversation or will have that conversation at some point of like, you know, knowing everything, especially them, because they're under so much media scrutiny, And you can only shield your kids so much before somebody Googles or somebody at school is like, hey, I saw your dad and mom are like suing each other or something. And it just, to me, it felt so real. You know, and Jason had said in the media week thing for the season started, he's like, I knew I was going to have to go in some caves before this started if we were going to write this correctly. And that's just what you got to do for it. And so, you know, it's hard to take your pain and make it into art, even though it sounds really romantic and whimsical. Like, oh, isn't this great? Bad things can happen. You just make it. That's a hard thing to do, but I think we're all better for it because it's shown the nuance that a lot of people probably don't think about. I think you hear custody and divorce and split and co-parenting, and you think fighting all the time, and it's a really bad situation, and the kid loses, which is why we have this idea in this country, particularly in states where I've lived, of like fatherlessness, of how like a father not being in the home is what causes blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. What causes that is not having a mother, not having money and not having the resources to live. Like, we're seeing the nuance of like two parents who are absolutely there for the kids, wanting to support them. And things are tricky because life is tricky. And sorry, I'm rambling. It was just really beautiful.
I agree. It was one of the more beautiful scenes the show has ever put together. Like, it was fantastic. Yeah. Alex, you said you had another scene though.
I did. I don't want to like, this could be another thing. Like the week that we just bared our souls, Caroline.
Oh no, here we go. Let's do it.
And I'm really not, because it's a painful story, but like the locker room scene where they're talking about, photos and keeping photos on your phone. And I completely agree, Caroline, that like the dialogue did get very like after school, especially like, but why is weed a problem?
Yeah.
What's so bad about drugs, guys? It's super cool. Sure. But I also think that was like intentional. Yeah. And I think it worked so well. You know, like, be very careful about this because I don't, it's not that I have a problem talking about it. One day I'll write about it probably. But, you know, years ago, I was in a situation, and like, by the way, what happened to Keely is called revenge porn. And a lot of people think revenge porn is just like when your ex takes old photos and distributes them. But that's not always the case. Revenge porn, from a legal definition, is just somebody distributing sexually explicit images or texts or anything of you without your consent. So you can be hacked just like Keely was, or just like all those actresses were years ago. And that is considered legally revenge porn,
which could be the commission painting that someone sat for and then gave to Will Kitman, which I have questions about.
Burn it. You got to burn it, bro.
So when I use that term, I just don't want anybody to think it was like, you know, it was what it was. But years ago, I was in a similar situation, and somebody that I knew had access to one of my devices and took, you know, personal things of mine between me and a person I was involved with, and distributed those, not online. It wasn't a hack, but distributed those to people in my life who are in power. Let's just say that, people who could control, you know, my employment, my job, things like that. And I'm not here to like tell my story or anything. Believe me, I paid for years of trauma therapy, but I here's why I bring it up. I have a vivid memory of walking into a room and sitting down and being confronted with printouts of this, of things that were my private correspondence with another person. And I was given to that by people in power who were supposed to protect me and look out for me. And instead, they made me feel awful. They made me feel embarrassed. It was the most traumatizing moment of my life. And I spent years saying I was the problem. Why did I take those photos? What? I mean, this was someone I was involved with. Okay. And look, I'm not saying you should or shouldn't. But this was in the confines of a relationship. This was not me like tweeting out photos of myself, which I think is totally cool too, if you want to do that and Elon doesn't, you know, ruin your vibe. This wasn't like an OnlyFans situation, nothing like that. It's like Keely said, she had control over the stuff that was out there about her. But to be confronted with things that were your personal property on your personal device, nothing in my life will be more humiliating than that. And I went through years of trauma therapy to get over it. And it wasn't on Twitter. Thousands of people didn't see it. Yeah. This wasn't a big scandal. This was like three people, but it was three people who like were the last people that I ever thought would see something like that. And so I say that to say, like, I'm obviously not the only person to go through something like that. And to watch that locker room scene take place where they broke down truly all the excuses that people give whenever revenge porn comes up in the news. Well, you shouldn't have taken those photos. Well, you knew the risk you were taking by texting them. Well, you knew you shouldn't have done this. You should have had a better password. You should. Okay. There are a million you shoulds out there. And I'm not saying they're necessarily wrong in terms of we all need cybersecurity in our lives, right? Like, we should all be responsible about
My sister approves this message.
Right? But it wasn't about that.
No.
And I was a grown woman who believed for years that I was bad and I was shameful and I, you know, had just like let everybody down, even people who didn't know what happened. I was like, oh my God, what would my dad say if he knew? I mean, it was just the same sexist ass bullshit that every woman goes through when she is told your body's an object, you should be ashamed of it, unless you're dating somebody, then they should have full access to it. Like, it's disgusting. And so the way that whole locker room scene played out of like, but wait a second, what if you took the photos? What if you, because these are real conversations that people have of
what
like,
if you're French,
well, yeah,
that could take weeks if you're Danny Rojas.
Exactly. And it's like, but what if you did this way? Like,
yeah.
That had to happen. And if it had to happen in a cheesy way, so be it.
Yeah, 100%.
And again, I'm totally projecting my personal life here. This is not a writing critique. This is me saying, like, we need more men to have those conversations. We need more men to say, you know, if their friend says, hey, look at this photo of my ex-girlfriend that she took. Dude, get it off
Delete
your phone.
That. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Delete that.
We need more Isaac McAdoo's.
Isaac in this one. I mean, and that leads into also, Isaac is now the first that we know of team member who knows that Colin is gay, or at least has a very strong idea. I would assume based on what he saw on that phone that Isaac is gay or that Colin is gay. And I took that kind of nod as him processing. And I see no scenario where Isaac is anything but perfect with that scenario.
I think there's going to be a nice moment between them. There better be a nice moment between them next episode.
Or Caroline will hunt someone down and fight them.
That was probably my biggest complaint from this one, is just that I really could have used, because whatever. It just was kind of like, I wanted him to have a little, like, not reassure Colin. Colin doesn't need to be reassured. He's not doing anything wrong. Like, it's who he is. Like, this is how, yeah. But, I don't think they will, because there's no way they have that scene with Isaac and show Isaac being constantly like this upstanding with the times smart fella bruv, and have him have some like homophobic tendencies. I just don't see it. I would be devastated if they went that route, and I don't think they will. But I think I texted Nicole, like, we were talking about the locker room scene, and I was like, yeah, it got a little after schooly, but honestly, I think it all needed to be said. So I'm glad that they did it that way. So same, agree. Yeah. And they did such a, that's why I also think, that's a good call, Alex, for saying, putting it up there with like one of the best scenes, because it also, one, we saw a lot more Jamie growth. Mm-hmm. Just in that scene.
Although his locker is basically Brian Fantana's office from Anchorman. With
all of the links.
60% of the time it works every time.
Man, what a great Paul Rudd role.
Oh, amazing.
But you get to see, like, you see Roy's reaction to hearing the news. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that Sam would have said out loud that Keeley was one of the people hacked with Roy right there. I think, like, I've been a lot, you just wouldn't say that if, like, you'd wait until Roy leaves the room and be like, guys, I got
two X's in
there. Yeah, I have some really bad news. You wouldn't just say it in front of Roy. Also, Sam's ex-girlfriend deleting Candy Crush off his phone is extremely petty, and I respect it.
When he's like, it hurt, but I get it.
For some reason, just because I was like, I was watching, but I was also like trying to multitask. My thought, I just imagine, I'm not saying it was Rebecca, I just imagine like an image of her like deleting stuff off his phone and being like, oh well, Candy Crush is gone. Like, not that she sent him nudes, but that would just be really funny. Maybe she did though. More power to her.
Some other scenes to touch on. I think we've talked about it a little bit, but the beginning when it transitions from, you know, Ted, the soccer announcer, Arlo, participating in sports washing white, giving the transition to Ted must be so happy. And then it's his face deeply concerned talking to Michelle and Dr. Jacob. They're vibing. Ted pulling out the matchbook, I took that as a lot of symbolism to, I mean, we've obviously seen that Rebecca's held on to it as well from the psychic. I look at it too as that represents a very strong father-son bond. And that is someone that I think we have seen, the two players that we have seen Ted even surpass that coach role and as much like as close to a fatherly type role with two of his younger players, I would say that's Jamie and Sam. Jamie, who has a gaping hole in his life where there should be a father, and Sam, who has such a strong relationship with his father and was feeling very homesick. And that to me is Ted keeping that matchbook. That is one semblance of the importance of the relationships between fathers and sons and parents and children in the show. And Ted being so proud of someone who he's seen grow over three seasons. So I thought that was important. Just Caroline's the maid, the nothing's impossible. I missed it the first time I watched and then saw it again. And it's like, that's something. It's not nothing.
Also, how like father, like son, was it that like Ted had clearly asked if she could finagle the machine that way before? Like, you told me that was impossible. I have a couple. So shout out to both the Diamond Dogs and the Love Hound scenes. Mm-hmm. Both excellent. Roy's refusal. Well, first of all, Roy is so great. That has to be one of the few times he calls him Ted, isn't it?
When he says you want
to
talk
about it? I'm trying to remember. Yeah, where he goes, like, or he says, like, I'm sorry, Ted. Like, when, so Ted just leads with, like, Dr. Jacob is proposing. Like, and they're all like, oh, no. Well, also, I mean, shit, the start of the scene where he's like, where would you take someone to propose? And they're like, Paris, obviously. But Diamond Dogs, just, it always hits for me. I'm sorry, I don't know if that's cheesy or not, but it hits for me. I love the little, like, we got a new member. And just Roy hating it so much, but still listening to everything.
I love that getting Higgins whole, like, down there involved Beard picking up the phone and barking into the phone.
I didn't even catch that. I wasn't even paying attention to what he did. And he ran down there and he goes... The three things that Roy said through the glass were, oh, never fucking mind. They said Roy didn't want to do it, and he said it was a living fucking nightmare. And when Ted said that he only said that was going to happen because they're going to Paris, he goes, God damn it. And that's where he also said the I'm her ex-husband, not her current father, which I don't know why that made me laugh so hard. But and we got the Trent Crim woof. All of it top notch.
He's
loved
trying.
It
was wonderful.
So I think the matchbook was an intentional misdirect to start with. Like, I think it could represent a lot of things. I think that was like going back to banter season two when we see the Rebecca Ted, we think they're texting each other. I think that comes out, it's like, whoa, because everyone I've talked to is like, okay, that kind of made us all pause, like, what is this here for?
I thought that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, and they can be both things that I'm saying. I'm not arguing that, you know, anything. And obviously they were all there that night. So of course they have this, like, you know, hanger on their pockets. But what I thought was interesting was the parallel between that scene and then Rebecca messing with her matchbook when she ran into John Wings Knight and his lady. And, you know, I think like what that restaurant is represented as far as like the night they all went there. And then of course, fathers and sons and everything else. I think it's been really interesting, but like, I think they know what they're doing and they want to like keep people guessing as far as what's going to happen. Cause I think if we could telegraph at this point that Ted and Michelle are going to end up together, like it would get kind of boring. Right. And I think that's the point the three of us have made for a long time. Like, who wants to sit around and guess what's going to happen? Like, it's so fun when they throw us these things and we're like, we have no idea what that means. And so, yeah. I don't know. I thought it was really, really lovely. And there's so much Paris stuff, you guys. First of all, another movie I would like to do on this podcast, but I doubt anyone would vote for it. French Kiss. Who's seen it?
I don't think I've seen it.
French Kiss. I haven't. What is that? Which one is that?
It's Meg Ryan.
In.
And what's his face?
In.
Kevin Kline.
Oh, in.
And it's like one of my favorite rom-coms. I think I saw it when I was younger than Jack. because my dad stupidly let me have a TV with HBO when I was younger. And so I watched it, and it's like, it's just one of those, it's definitely the first movie that made me want to go to Paris and then Italy and like everywhere. I was just like, I want to travel when I get older. But bringing that up along with Sex and the City, very interesting to me.
A lot of signs, different. And first it was Amsterdam, now it's Paris.
One thing too, and I don't know. Okay, wait. You go ahead and do your ad break. So I feel like it's ad break time. And I'm
how did you know?
Getting in
the Let's take a quick ad break and then we'll get back with the categories.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, we're back. We're yes. going to be nice and concise and fly through these categories like we always do.
Why are you lying to the listeners?
Laughing child? Liam Award and best one-liner or joke. I'm going to, hey, you know me, I'd like some hyperbole. Was this the least funny episode of Ted Lasso ever? Not to say that it wasn't funny, but I found myself finding like there was no one who was standout funny.
Sure.
I'm giving it to Jamie for one very specific line. And I don't know if this is because my sister works in cybersecurity. But and we didn't talk about this in best scenes. When he goes to Keely's house, it is lovely.
Okay. I have that and in a different category.
Yes. But she says, oh no. So really it comes out that seems to be that the hack actually targeted Jamie, and Jamie had the video in his email. So despite being one that was very like adamant about deleting things, like he did not remember to do it from his email, and therefore when that was hacked, and he's like, I should have chosen a stronger password. And she goes, oh no, Jamie, is it password? And he says yeah, but he said yes, and he goes, yeah, to be fair, I thought I'd fooled them because I'd spelled it with two S's. Like that he thought, the implication being that he thought password is spelled with one S. I don't know why that is the funniest thing to me. But it also does tie into an inside joke with our family that because my sister is in cybersecurity stuff, she's always constantly on us for like, I always do this stuff anyway. We have to for most stuff at work, like the two-factor. I think I spend most of my day doing two-factor authentication.
I used to have it for Twitter.
I know, me too, but who needs that? So my dad and I always will make jokes about our passwords being password 123 and like variations on that. And she's like, guys, it's not funny. Cybersecurity threats are real, like that kind of thing. And so him just the one S thing absolutely killed me. I think that was the funniest line. Or Roy with the just his disdain for the diamond dogs always makes me laugh.
I wish LastPass would have sponsored this episode.
That would have been amazing. I thought
it would have been nice.
Okay. So I feel like, again, this is going to be like a thing that I think the women listeners might rally around. Rebecca talking about masturbation and her parents' couch getting upholstered I was crying laughing so hard.
When she said, she's like, I walked into the edge of the sofa once. That felt nice. Yeah.
They had to get it reupholstered. I blamed it on the dog. We don't have a dog.
We don't have a dog.
We won't get into it too much, but like, it's painfully true that women just grow up being like, we don't know. men just have like a built-in instruction manual. What are you gonna, like, okay, it's there, might as well mess with it until something happens. Women have a whole like system of bells and whistles, and we don't know what to do. We don't know, and we're not gonna mess
you guys
with
are
it.
Like an erector set.
So put it mildly. I died because it's like, and it's also one of those jokes that I think you just get conditioned to thinking about how like more conservative men would be like, oh, that is so appalling that a woman would make a joke like that. And I thought it was perfect. Like, we need more jokes like that about women and sex and their bodies.
Rebecca might get, she might get my nod for this one, because she also had, this isn't necessarily a ha-ha funny line, but the, oh, please, the Eiffel Tower is just a lamppost with a publicist is a great line.
That's what
line.
I had written down. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Fantastic line. And
I,
she also,
I hope they were able to film in Paris before this episode came out, because now they might not be allowed back.
They've also absolutely loved the conversation with Ted because of him mispronouncing or saying the wrong name for everything and her correcting it. And like, at her French accent is really good. And then just even to the point where he says Sex and the City and she's like, Sex and the City. Like, that was excellent. And I did also, I thought the other super relatable scene was when, what is that guy's name? Roger was sitting in Nate's office. He's like, am I in trouble? And he was like, no. And then like, what is the Disco comes in? He's like, are we in trouble? And Nate's like, no. And then Disco's comment on, I've been married 3 times. Never tell a woman how you feel. And then when they leave, he goes, now are we in trouble? I see there were a few, maybe it might be the not the funniest, but I definitely, there are several times where I was laughing, where I cackled a bit.
The only other thing I have written down is when Higgins is just apoplectic after Ted has rushed him down on a whim, and he says, I'm gonna have leg cramps in my sleep tonight.
Also relatable.
Yeah, and I think you might have mentioned this earlier, Caroline, but Barbara saying maybe not Facebook because that's just for grandparents and racists now, is
it? I texted that to you, yes. Also very funny.
So good. What's the best Ted moment of this episode? I wrote down post phone call from Rebecca, like hopping into the moment and going to sync with Henry. I think that's important.
I think that's, I also liked, I liked when he read to him in bed, even though like they're, you know, starting to ask him, I don't know. I'm not a single parent, but I thought that probably closes in on like, I don't think you're supposed to press the kid for info on the other person. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not against it. But when he was kind of like, oh, does so Dr. Jacob read you books? But I think I like that he took him to the West Ham game. You know, he like, that was his day. They, and Beard, they both were like, all right, we're doing this. Let's do it. And it just showed again that he doesn't have this like intense animosity that I think Nate expected him to have for him. So I thought that was a nice dad moment. But I think Alex, I think it's like after the phone call.
I need to know what those seats cost. Day of game.
Close enough to the game. Bench to yell at the coach.
I mean, definitely bought on like Ticketmaster. Is Ticketmaster fucking up the Europe like it is us? Like, are they holding
the fees alone?
Monopoly, just stunning. Mm. Horrible stuff. The Rupert Award for the villain of this episode. Yeah, when I put together this run sheet at the beginning of the season, I said, you know, Rupert is basically Voldemort, so he's ineligible for this category. But even in an episode where he has no lines, he is still bad.
Yeah.
By refusing to go to Nate's Lady Hounds.
Love Hounds.
Meeting. Or Love Hounds.
Lady Hounds would be pretty funny.
The Lady Hounds. But yeah, it's Jack. And internet pirates, like internet thievery, like those fucking people are terrible. The worst humans.
Oh, yeah. If we're counting the hackers, like the hackers take it. Yeah. If we're counting like people that like, I think it's Jack in this one. And I agree. I don't think necessarily this means that she's like a huge villain and the absolute worst, et cetera, et cetera. I think we're all agreement before that, or with the love bombing stuff too, that she's not the fit for our Keely.
I have a weird thought. What if Shandy was the one behind it?
Oh, does Shandy have that kind of? She'd have to know a guy. I don't think Shandy's hacking, because it was a lot
sure,
of.
Sure, I don't think she's doing. But like,
I'm ready to like roll the sleeves up.
Because we have to think, like, they went after Jamie's email. Someone mentioned, like, a reality star with a big dick. Like, it just has Shandy written all over it. But who knows?
You know what? I would be furious, but that would make sense.
And I feel like Barbara has been trying to telegraph something to Keely, you know, for episodes, mini episodes. And I feel like at first, of course, we all thought she just didn't like her. And that was probably true because she didn't know her. But I've had the feeling, and I don't think I'm alone, that she's been, especially in the last episode, it's her problem wasn't so much with that Jack's the boss, even though, again, that's a problem. Mm. It felt like she was trying to telegraph to her, like, you're about to go through a thing that I've watched her go through with other people.
Yeah.
Like, I've watched other people suffer for what's about to happen. And so, yeah, it's interesting. Can we talk about the Sex and the City episode that was on?
Yeah, please. I knew, I was like, Alex will know exactly what scene this is, like which episode it's from.
This is from the, I believe it is season, oh God, here we go. Season 6, episode 6, 7?
Oh my God.
Okay, Caroline, right now, I want you to look up Sex and the City, season 6, episode 7. Don't tell me what it says. Just look it up. And okay. Tell me when you
hold
have
on
it
to make sure I type sex and not sex in.
Sex in this. I mean, it would have worked either way.
Six. Which one do you think it is? Six or seven?
If I'm go with seven first. If I'm right about this, y'all, I have serious brain issues because I haven't watched the show regularly in years. Does it say something about the post-it note breakup?
Are you serious? Get out of here. I was like, there's no way. I was like, I think she means that this is like a Paris one or something when she's with the Russian. There's no way. There's no way. It is called The Post-it Always Sticks Twice.
Okay. So let me give you,
get out of here.
Let me give you some background on this. You're because I definitely knew like what the episode was. I didn't know. Okay. Anyway. What has happened in the episode that Keely is watching is if you are a Sex and the City person, or even if you're not, culturally, you've probably picked up on the fact that Carrie's two big love interests were Big and Aiden. Those are the ones that were like the biggest in her life, right? And if you remember in season 2, when she and Roy, Keely and Roy got in the fight, what was on was a episode of Carrie and Aiden fighting about how he's just kind of around all the time, which was kind of Keely's issue too, right? So what we have in the episode that's playing when she and Jack have their little squabble, Carrie, a few episodes earlier, you know, Carrie's a writer. At this point, she started freelancing for Vogue, or she might have been a staff writer or staff editor. I can't remember details. I can just remember numbers. She actually meets this guy named Berger, that's his last name, in like the waiting room at Vogue. He's a writer too. And for the first,
played by the guy from Office Space,
Ron Livingston.
Ron Livingston.
Yes, him.
I knew that when she said Berger. Jacqueline was watching enough Sex in the City with me in the room, and I love Ron Livingston.
See, so the kind of setup for this is she's been through Big over and over, and like he destroyed her. She's been through Aiden, and she kind of destroyed that because she was like with him in love, and then she cheated on him with Big, and they tried to
That's fine.
She and Aiden tried to get back together, and then it didn't work. Berger. Other than the Russian, which is like what they end up calling him at the end of the show, and that has to do with Paris, but we'll get to that later. Other than the Russian, Berger was like the other big one because he was the first one that's kind of on her level. Before this, she had dated men who were like significantly more than her, whether it was like in wealth and like obviously Big was super rich. Aiden had his whole like furniture empire going on. It was always the men.
Wasn't there a senator? Congressman?
Yeah.
John Slattery played a guy?
Yes. That was short-lived, though. So Berger was like the other big one in her life, and they were both writers. And when you date a writer, speaking of somebody who has dated writers before, in the beginning, it's just great. You both have the same professional struggles. You're like, we can edit each other. And you think, like, we're on the level. He gets me. I get him. But more often than not, if one of y'all dares to be more successful than the other, it takes a very strong person on the other side of that to be like, I'm not resentful. I'm very supportive. Now, this is not me saying those relationships don't exist. I know a lot of couples who are writers and they're great. In this case, though, Berger was like a really great guy. And then Carrie sold her book. Like it, there was a Paris hook here. It was like to the publisher in Paris. They were going to print it in Paris. And he suddenly started acting like a child. And yeah. He was resentful of her. And she couldn't believe it because he was like this cool guy. He was definitely like the most on the level with her that she'd been. And so in this particular episode, she is upset, rightfully so, because he's broken up with her via Post-it note. And I believe the Post-it note says something like, I'm sorry, I just can't do this. Yeah. And what we're actually hearing in that scene with Keeley and Jack is like the girls talking about it, being like, he broke up with me on a Post-it note. Then you hear Miranda say, like, I got broken up with by a guy who had his doorman do it for him and stuff like that.
Yes. But yeah.
That relationship was like another step of significance because once again, Carrie has gone into something thinking like, this is what it is. This is what the situation is. Not realizing like nobody's really capable of being like a partner to her. And that was the closest she had gotten. And I feel like Keeley probably feels that way. And if he was like, obviously, I'm not saying Jamie was her big or that Roy was her Aiden, but there are parallels there. Certainly like Big was very, he didn't want to commit. And he just kind of, he was very superficial about the whole thing. Didn't want to say that he loved her. And then Aiden swoops in and is suddenly the savior. But basically he was just Big in a nice way. He would like smother her with niceness and be like, well, why don't you care about how nice I am? And then you have Berger, who's like kind of out of left field, but seems to make sense, which I think Keeley and Jack have. But then like they both kind of discover who he is and they least expect it. And it's, yeah, I don't know. I think it's significant.
That only makes me nervous because I want Keeley to end up with who you have identified as Big. And,
well, Carrie ends up with Big. Roy. He just dies of a.
That,
I know.
Or I want Keeley to end up with who you identified as Aiden. She doesn't end up with Aiden.
I don't think like when they do those parallels, I don't think it necessarily means like, here's your conclusion. I don't think they're spelling it out for us. I just think it's a really nice way of telling a story that the scenes we've seen of her just trying to clearly Sex and the City is her decompression show. And we all have our decompression shows, right? And it's just very interesting that it's matched the tone, you know, like she and Jack seem to be hot and heavy. And then all it takes is a piece of paper to break them up, right? And the fact that Jack cannot handle that Keeley has been with other people. So I just think it's interesting.
These are those times once a week where I'm just like, man, I don't have those brainwaves.
That's incredible.
And now we have a new Ted Lasso Sex and the City crossover podcast.
Yeah.
Sex and Man City.
I'm excited about it. And I like, all I hope is that, because I can totally see if they carry this out to the end, then we have the Russian. That's what I'm saying. Is I don't think anybody on Sex and the City represents the different guys, but I could totally see them recreating the Paris scene, which is how Sex and the City ends as a show. And it's Big showing up on the bridge after she's gotten in the fight with what is his name?
Alex.
It's Alexander something, but yeah. And he's like, what does he say? Like, you've always been the girl or something stupid.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone's gonna end in Paris.
Dude, I swear. They've got 4 episodes to bring Dutch guy back. Colin and Isaac stay friends. Danny to do something.
Have Colin come out to the team.
Yeah.
I think
kisses fell after they win the cup. Like there's a lot. There's a lot of stuff.
So speaking of win the cup, look at Caroline with a transition there on the pitch, talking about the sports action. So we know Richmond is rolling. Shout out to patron of the show, Andrew Teagle. If you want to support the show, be a patron. You can do that, folks. Andrew. So on Twitter, he said, this was a quote tweeting last week's episode. So in this week's episode, we pondered where the Greyhounds were in the relegation fight as the self-appointed Premier League consultant to the pod. Here's my breakdown. He said, okay, so typically 30 to 35 points in the EPL keeps you from being relegated. Thanks to Beard's whiteboard update at the start of season 3, episode 5, after the Newcastle match, we know that Richmond is sitting on 24 points. Also, now that I'm reading that, him saying after the Newcastle match, that also that's Keely mentions Newcastle in the video that she has sent to someone. And that I also think gives credence to Roy, like, needing to know, because he's worried that that went
that literally just
in the Newcastle
happened.
Match. That literally just happened. So that makes even more sense about his moment of weakness. But anyways, says after the Newcastle match, we know that Richmond is sitting on 24 points. Throw in that they played 15 matches through Newcastle, plus then Man City and Arsenal losses, and the Greyhounds are at 24 points through 17 games. 38 matches are in an EPL season, so the Greyhounds sit at 69% of the needed points to avoid a drop. They're 45% of the way through the season. Wouldn't be in the relegation discussion at this point, and would take no or few points in their next 10 matches to be. And someone then replied, Aaron, who's a listener to the show, thanks for this. Where does this realistically put them in terms of the let's win the whole fucking thing?
Yeah, thank you. That was my question.
Andrew said, hard to say. Most years around 90 points win it. Best Richmond case would be 2015, 2016. Is it Leicester City?
Leicester.
No, Leicester. These fucking European names. Who won with 81 points. Richmond has 21 games left. Max point total is 87, 63 potential points plus 24 current. So if they win out, 87 points would likely do it. Also didn't cross-reference where Man City was based in the multi-game montage from earlier in the season. City could be uncatchable at this point. 87 points would have been good for third in the 2021-2022 season. 87 points would have won the EPL in the 2020-2021 season. So, all that being
said. That
was
a lot of math. Is that a yes? A
lot of math.
They're good?
They're good. So the thing is, they're rolling. They're doing, it sounds like they need to do close to win out, or, you know, go on a hell of a run.
Yeah.
Probably went out to have a shot at winning the thing. The good thing about this show is that the writers control who's, you know, how everyone else is doing, which is nice. It's like me playing pretend in my backyard when I was nine. You know, the Twins can win the World Series that way. So, you know, we're rolling. It's setting up that way. We got a nice little vocal audio montage to start the episode. So it looks like Richmond Total Football works. Jamie's running things. You know, Jamie is Chris Paul on the point. So that's good. That is our on the pitch segment of this episode.
I could have, I'm not going to lie to you. I could have done with a little visual. I appreciated the audio montage to start to let us know, but I do love when they throw us some little sporty scenes.
I like it as well.
I like it.
I don't think you realize how psychologically healthy that is award. I am going to combine this for the which character showed the most personal growth in this episode. I'm going to combine this with the food poisoning award for which moment from this episode gave you the most stress. I think Jamie coming to apologize to Keely again showed a lot of emotional growth, also gave me a ton of stress. Because yes, I don't want them to end up together. That would, and I, especially after seeing how Roy feels about Keely, because that is still there, it would break my heart. I think Roy, if Keely was truly happy, Roy could live, but I don't know. I would be bummed. They would have to do a lot of selling on me. Like, it would have to be Roy maybe reunites with Phoebe's teacher or something. Like, I just can't have him ending this episode alone and Keely's happy with Jamie or something. I don't know. I'm just rambling now, but I'm scared.
I think that, so our friend Nicole, who was on the pod last week for the first time, she does want to come back. She's just busy this week, so we did not scare her away with our lack of rules and meandering. She is kind of team Jamie and Keely, which, here's my thing. I think that they have earned that relationship if that's the way that they decide to go story-wise. Like, I would not be, like, furious, like, that it came out of left field. I think the thing that broke Keely and Jamie up in the first place was his immaturity, his self-centeredness, that whole, we've gone into it before. He's clearly grown and matured and is a totally different person and character than we saw from season one, even from season two. That being said, I am still Keely Roy. His, oi, like when he ran into, like, that makes my heart skip a beat. I love Roy so much. I think Jamie is going to kind of help facilitate them getting back together. Like, I don't know why. I feel that in my soul, because I think he's going to see that that's the better fit. Maybe that they do, because he said, like, what was really sweet about that whole scene was Jamie's honesty and vulnerability and saying, like, you know, for a while I kept the pictures because I thought we were going to get back together, And then I got angry and deleted some when you got with Roy, because I thought you were doing it just to make me mad. He's like, but then I saw that it was real. And she kind of lights up at that. Like, she smiles at that. And so I think that was such a like big moment for him, that he's just, like, he's just grown so much. I'm so proud of our sexy baby.
Alex, where are you at on this?
This one is really hard to know what to feel or think. Like, I think Roy is so tortured by how things ended. And I think Roy had a very bad moment because people are flawed and they can do really shitty things. I don't say that in a way to say, well, let's forgive him. No, let's not. Let's hold him accountable, right? Let's hold anyone accountable who would say something that disgusting. But I think, to me, the vibes between Jamie and Keely have been really friendly and healthy. I mean, I think, you know, it stood out to me in, remember at the beginning of season two, when it was one of our little cute little episodes, Kyle, I said, you know, it stood out to me. I think it was an it had to be ep two. It was whenever he got kicked off the reality show. And she said, you deleted my number. And I was like, whoa, wait a second. And we kind of brought that thread out over the season. I said, you know, regardless of how you feel about an ex, like watching them get better, knowing that's all you tried to do or that's all you had hoped for when you were with them, is really hard. And it's not just resentment or jealousy or anything like that, but it's like when you see someone's best self and they just never quite get there because of whatever is holding them back, and then you watch them achieve that either on their own or with somebody else, it's hard because you remember, like, you invested in that best self even when it wasn't there. So you're watching it play out and you're like, wait a second, like, this was the person I loved. You know, if they end up together, like, they'll earn it. The writers will earn it. I really think it's going to be a rom-com ending for Roy and Keely. I think there's going to be a grand gesture. I think there's going to be a reckoning of, I'm an idiot and I'm stupid and I'm sorry. And I think the big thing with Jamie is, like, she has peace with him. I mean, think about it, we all have, like, at least one, maybe multiple shitty exes who were probably shitty for, like, non-Jamie reasons, but, you know, we resent them for what they put us through. We resent them for, like, did I mean anything to you? Because you treated me like I was nothing, and that's why I left. And so, like, to get that kind of closure after the breakup of, like, oh, okay, so you've grown and I've grown and we can have that, I think that's really important. I mean, I don't see them getting back together, but if they do, I don't think it'll be a surprise. And they're not going to leave Roy high and dry, but I don't think they'll put him with the teacher either. I think we would have seen her this season.
Yeah, 100%.
That's true.
You know...
It's a lot like me and Paul Bettany, really. Like, it was Hot and Heavy, yes, during A Knight's Tale.
That's what I was thinking.
And A Beautiful Mind. And then there was that long stretch where I was like, how could you do this to me? Like, you were supposed to be it. And then
Jennifer Connelly, really?
Yeah. Well, and then finally he cashes in all the stock I bought in him. He's starring in, you know, he makes that Marvel money. Stars in Uncle Frank, the Amazon Prime movie, which was lovely, made me cry, and it's like it's all happened, and I'm so happy for him that he's grown, and he, you know, we're finally appreciating him like we should. So it's that exact.
Please note that his wife Jennifer Connelly, however, is in a movie that made more money than his movies because she was on Top Gun Maverick. Thank you very much.
The Connelly Bettany great great grandchildren will be doing fine.
That
family is doing okay financially, which is good.
I think I've said this really quick. I think I've said this on the podcast before as an aside. Maybe this is why I thought we did Wimbledon at one point. But there's a scene in Wimbledon where it's one of those, like, late night, like, he's sneaking out to go see what's her face things, and Jon Favreau's in his bed, his agent. And so the scene is, like, Bettany crawling over him to get out of bed. And if you pay attention, like, listen really closely, you can hear Favreau say, oh, Jennifer. And Bettany starts laughing. Like, he broke in that scene and they kept it. It's really amazing.
So good. So good. Glad I got a Paul Bettany reference in here. Best time, worst time. I have an obvious candidate for worst time. And that is Nate's divorced assistant. He has been divorced 3 times, paying alimony times 3 each month. Must be horrible. Guy is having a terrible time every month when direct deposit hits.
Okay. Yes. The actual answer is probably Keely. Worst time.
Keely's having a terrible time.
Yeah.
Do we think Dr.
Henry has the best time?
Henry has a great time. Do we think Dr. Jacob has a bad time?
I think he thinks he had a good time. I think he thinks it went well.
He thinks it went very well.
Yeah.
He's very oblivious to the emotional circumstances that he is in, and which is not great if you're a therapist, honestly.
I was going to say, it's like not the best quality.
But not having the self-awareness of how you need to both assert yourself in talking to Ted about this scenario. And if you are, I mean, the most important thing, if you're dating a single parent, is how you are with that child. And that's not just like being nice to them, but that is forming some sort of bond and not coming on too strong. Like, I will say, like, I am extremely fortunate. My wife is an incredible mom and has been everything I could have ever hoped for. But that takes time, both parent and child. And Dr. Jacob seems to be like, he thinks he's about to cross the finish line and he's in the starting gate and he doesn't realize it.
He doesn't know it. And like, look, we want potential step parents to all be great. Like, that's the dream, right? The worst case scenario is they're a shitty step parent. Like, you want your ex to end up with somebody wonderful who your kid loves, but it was just very evident. Like, or in the show, like, it's not, you know, in the fact that, I don't know, I just thought it was just very funny what a dork Jake is.
No, for sure. Lenny Harris pinch hitter award for best supporting character. Again,
who's a support?
Again,
Henry
was
the
good.
Busker. I think the busker is saying, "Hey Jude."
Now he was good really too. Great. Higgins was outstanding.
Yeah. He's the Trent usage rate on Higgins and Danny this season has been incredible. Mm. Come in, take 8 corner threes, make all of them, sub out.
Yeah.
The big chill. I think the whole "Hey Jude" scene is big chill, for sure.
Yes. Like,
an argument for Jamie showing up at Keeley's.
That gave me a different kind of chill.
Down your spine.
Just, oh no. It's like Michael Myers showing up at the door to my emotions. Again, I shouldn't be so... I have faith in the writers that however they end this, it will feel earned and it will feel right and it will feel honest to these characters. I'm just... my loyalties lie where they lie. And that's all, to quote Forrest Gump, that's all I have to say about that. With that, 4 episodes left. What needs to be answered? What might be answered? What are we looking for? What's immediate? I think Colin and Isaac are immediate.
Yeah, and per the preview for next week, which has now popped up since the episode's out, it says they have tension. And again, to reiterate, if that tension is anything other than him saying, "I thought we were close enough that you would tell me," then I will be devastated. but that I need that to be resolved as soon as possible, because that is what's going to give me the most stress. Because I had stress watching every new scene that came up and being like, not Colin and Isaac talking about this. That's number one on my list. Number two, or 1B, is where the hell is the Dutchman?
In Holland, I would guess.
Yeah, well, fine. I need him to be in Richmond. And then I'll go I think I need Jack out now. Like, I need a little bit of, like, what's going to happen with Keeley. I hope it doesn't affect, I mean, I don't know how it wouldn't, but I don't know. If it doesn't affect job stuff, obviously. But I think we need to leave at least a couple episodes runway for Roy to land that plane.
Alex, what do we get next episode? What are you thinking?
I don't know. Like, I'm so bad at, like, the next episode stuff. I thought of something though, and I'm gonna replace my answer with this that has nothing to do with it. Do you remember what Beard said to Ted when they thought Henry had been bullied? They said,
"Fly to Paris."
Yeah.
If we get on a plane right now, after a layover in Paris,
Alex,
we can be in Kansas by whenever.
They're both going to come and be at the airport.
It is a rom-com. But we never denied that. This was never an issue. It's not like a rom-com like in its purpose, but like I think it's going to end a very rom-com-y way.
Man. Whew. Well,
those are my party.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it. Cannot wait for the next episode. They're landing the plane. That landing gear's down.
Literally.
Seems like it's real smooth. Runway's lit up. Whatever other plane analogies I can make, like the things seem to be going well. The tray tables are up. I've wrapped up the movie I'm watching, so I can just like have my backpack ready to get off the plane.
He's checked what carousel his baggage is coming out on. Just kidding. He doesn't check his bags. You kidding me?
Oh, I fly Southwest. Of course we check the bags. Bags fly free.
Oh,
God's
nice.
Airline.
Hell
bags
yeah.
Bags fly free.
Well, yeah, when they take off.
Bags fly free and then get stuck on a tarmac in Denver for 30 days.
You should have said that you wanted him on the plane with you.
That's a good point. With that, y'all, this was great. Everyone check out Bet for the Win and For the Win. Follow all of us on Twitter. Check out From Phenom to the Farm if you like baseball. Go to the Patreon if you support the show, if you want to support the show. And we'll see you next week at a time and date undetermined. Thanks for listening.